thank you. In the first instance.
Well, really, it's a family tradition going back to my great-grandfather's day and probably before then. Carried on from there to father to son, as it were. And I suppose, really, I would be the last along the line. My son, Chris, he did a little in the Furnace Vale mine prior to its closure, and that's really how it happened.
Where did your family come from originally?
Staffordshire.
They migrated to...
To Kettleshume initially, and it was first set up when they came to the Kettleshume district many, many years ago, which would be my great-grandfather. And they took on a farm. The name of the farm was the Neighbour Way Farm in Kettleshume. And the great-grandfather then was interested again in mining, and there was a coal seam on the other side of the valley, as it were, known as Spons Hill. And he set about the mining of that area. So the story as given to me by my father was that they set about this mining project under Spons Hill, and it was a type of mining known as initially a cross measures drift. What I mean by a cross measures drift is that you tunnel through the measures. Coal, as you no doubt know, lies in seams. This area, in this area, at approximately 1 in 6. And
that's to the south, is it?
Yes, that's right. The strike of the mine, as it's termed in this area, is usually north and south anyway. So the idea of that type of mining, you can do one of two things. You can either follow it down from the outcrop, in which case you'll not get very far, because of course you'll be blessed with more water than you can deal with. So that you foot the seam, as it were, by driving a cross measures drift, and then when you hit the seam, you work to the rise, and the water that you make is then drained away through your tunnel. There's a very interesting story on that particular pit. It was on land belonging to Lord Newton of Lyme, and my great-grandfather was mining away there, not a lot of money, and having to make a living on the farm as well as, and that particular drift, I'm given to understand it would be about 100, 150 yards long, and part way he was having to manage with laths nailed to sleepers on the roadway, because he couldn't afford steel rails, and Lord Newton used to come round from time to time on horseback, and he'd see how things were going. 'Twas on his land anyway, and he was very interested. And one fine day when he came along, suppose my grandfather was looking well and truly fed up, and the money had more or less run out. And the Lord Newton of Lyme, at that particular Lord Newton, happened to say, "You seem to be having a bit of a rough time here," and so on, and that's the way it went. And the following day, a man came from Lyme Hall with a cheque for the sum total of £200 to help him to get at the coal. Well, £200 in those days was an awful lot of money, and that really set the pit going. So that they reached the coal and mined away there, and made from a start of that description, the pit did eventually employ probably 20, 30 men from around Kettleshume in that Spons mine.
Did your father ever mention how the coal was worked in that mine?
Longwall again, the old longwall system. What I mean by longwall is you extract the whole of the coal, as it were. There are two methods of mining. One is longwall, the other pillar and stall. The thickness of the seam in that area would be about 17, 18 inches. The coal would be hewn out by hand, and a usual working place would be at about 15 yards wide. And what you have is the main road, which runs along the strike, as it were, and drains all the water away. And then at right angles to that, normally right angles to that, you take up each place, which is normally about 14, 15 yards wide. So each man has a boy, and that is the way it's spread out along. One of the first things that you have to do naturally when you've hit the coal is to make for air, because they're all mines of that description are naturally ventilated. So have your first thing that you have to do then is to follow the coal out to the outcrop and arrange for ventilation. Ventilation is by natural means, and it's the way that it works is because you have the two different levels. You have the lower level, the higher level, and the difference in pressure makes this possible.
And this was at this particular pit?
This is at that particular pit. Of course, it happens in any pit. You're lucky, really, if you get much more than 100 yards. The fact that you push a tub in and out will bring a certain amount of air in.
What did you assist the ventilation in any way? I mean, obviously, in the larger collieries they had fans.
Yes.
Some of the smaller collieries they use, you know, their own sort of little methods of ventilation.
Well, yes, they're brattice work normally. They would put brattice work in to block off, shall I say, the main road from the ancillary roads, and then you'd pack them up with dirt and clay to seal off any leakage and drive the air around the workings as far as ever possible. They're all naked light mines. You work with a candle stuck in a little bit of puddle clay. That particular pit at Spons was they sold coal in those days at 6 old pence per 100 weight, I'm told. The tunnel, the main tunnel, was heading towards Bowstone Gate, and they went out that way a lot of 2,000 yards. And as they went along with the main roadway, from time to time, they on the gateway, the main gates, they would run sort of main gates at intervals, and they would take a main gate out to the outcrop at intervals, perhaps about 100 yards or so, to again assist the ventilation of the mine. Now, in that type of mining, you what you do is, it's only about 17 or 18 inches high, the thickness of the seam. You hew it out by hand, and but you have to make a gate, as it's termed, to sort of draw the coal down. You throw it out with a coal shovel, small fire shovel. That's how you get it. Throw it out to a gate. Now, what I mean by a gate is you take a certain amount of the roof out. That's up the centre of your 15-yard stretch. You take roughly about 18 inches. You don't take any more than you can help, but you take it about 18 inches so that you're left with a roadway then about 2'6" high, so that it's thrown out from each side into this roadway with a fire shovel. From there, it's loaded into a sledge, and the sledge is...
How did you make the coal actually fall?
Well, did you not? Well, the easiest way of getting coal is to work it on what's known as the board. That is the smooth side of the coal. And what you do, it isn't everybody that does it this way, but the easy, you know, when you're used to it, you would undercut, you would slot under the coal. So that in other words, if you were first starting off, the ideal way of getting coal easily would be to put a bottom slot, a slot underneath about 2 foot deep. And as you go along, you'd put a sprag under to hold it as you go along. And a holing session, as it was termed, would take one a shift to get a good 2 foot holding in the height out.
When you remove the sprags, and supposing the coal didn't fall at that point, what would you do next to make the coal fall?
Well, what I'm sort of coming to is that you'd hole under that particular shift, and then when you came out at night, you'd knock out all your sprags, and then next morning, with a bit of luck, it might have fallen already for you. If not, you would drive wedges over the top, and you'd get nice, big, cobbly coal. So the start of your shift then would be to move that and get that out of the way, and the boy would sledge it out of the way, and then you would set to man and boy and put the undercut on for the next day. And that is how it works, and it works quite easily. When I say work it on the board, it isn't always right to do that. If you have a bad roof, or you have a tremendous weight above you, well then the coal could then be too small working it on the board. In that case, you work it on the end, as it were, so that you sort of stand a better chance of getting round a coal. But mostly in these mountain mines, it's worked on the board has been the best way.
What seam was actually worked at that?
Well, that mine was... that would actually be the same seam as the Irwood seam, that is the two shades. Why it has that name I don't know. It's the bottom seam in the mountain measures. In Furnace Vale here, where we're speaking, it's quite a fortunate part in the mountain mine series, because you have the top mine, which is the red ash. 26 yards below that you have the white ash, which is again a seam about 18 inches thick, but you have a fire clay floor to that, which is useful for brick making, about 4 foot 6 of clay. At 40 yards below that you have the yard mine. Is self-explanatory, really. The thickness of that particular seam is about 3 feet thick, and it's been very extensively mined around Whaley Bridge. Then at approximately 105 yards below that is speaking vertically, you have the two shades, which are the seams that I'm referring to at Kettleshume and at Irwood. Lies, I don't know how far, not so far above the Millstone Grit, which of course is known in mining as the Farewell Rock. And when you're getting up into that part of the valley, you're sort of heading nearer towards the Buxton area, which is of limestone. And of course, there isn't any coal that anybody knows about in the limestone series, so that really is the story of the mountain mine in this area as I know it.
You mentioned briefly that from the Longwall face they actually sledge the coal. Can you add a bit more to that?
Well, a sledge consists of... the fact is that your normal gate length is about 60 yards between the two levels, so that between the main level in the bottom and the higher level to ventilate the mine, they're at 60 yards intervals. Why they reckon them at 60 yards I don't know, but it seemed to be a standard practice. Now the roof that you take out, you sort of cut into the coal, into the solid for your roadway. You'd cut into it about 6 feet deep and about 4 feet wide, and then you'd drill a hole in the roof about about 4 feet, charge it up with explosive and bring it down. That would provide the waste material to pack the sides of the gateway, as it were. So in other words, you'd build back walls up the sides of your gateway, and as far as the waste would go, that would keep your roadway secure, so that when the roof did eventually come in, your roadway was safe, and that had happened beyond was sort of didn't matter anyway, but it kept your roadway safe. Now then, it was for ease in a way that use the sledge, because you didn't have to take so much of the roof out to sort of carry on. You got away with the minimum, so you ended up with a roadway or a gateway about 2 feet 6 high, and the sledge would be it's no more than a box arrangement, about 3 feet long, about 2 foot 6 wide, say about a foot deep, with 2 3x2 runners underneath, and steel runners with a ring on either end, a steel ring on each end.
Well, in the centre?
In the centre, the ends, yes. Well, the easiest way of getting it up to the top was to attach a belt around your waist, which was a leather belt, a fairly broad leather belt, about 3 inches wide. The chain would be about 4 feet long, a ring at one end and a hook at the other. So you sort of went on your hands and knees up the gate and pulled the thing behind you in that way. Very quite easy, really. Well, on the way down, of course, it came itself. The big job was to sort of come in front of it and pull it along with you, and for the purpose of braking it, you sort of wedge it into the side as you came down, and then you tip it up at the bottom. Normally a sledge would hold about 2,500 weights. The pit top would hold about 500 weights, which was pretty general anyway in the little mines.
Can I just clear that in my own mind? You're taking this from the working face out of the actual mine, are you? Or not? Are you
you're taking it to a point where you tip it into a tub. And then when you've tipped it into the pit tub, that actually, you only use the sledge on the 60-yard gate.
So how far would you actually have to haul the sledge?
Maximum 60 yards.
A maximum of
60 yards. The difference between the levels and the gate.
Referring back to what your father told you about the old mine near Kettleshill.
Yes.
Were women and children involved in that mine at all?
Not that I'm, no, not that I'm aware of. I never had reference to that, no. It was all local labour, and a team, a collier team, was always a man and a boy, and the job for the boy was to take the coal away from the face, from the getter, as it were, take it down to the loading point, if you like, and get rid of it that way, and then if he was enthusiastic enough, he'd get through his work quickly and have a go with the pick, and that's how colliers were made.
What name did you give to the man who was actually in charge of the colliers on the face like that?
He would be known as a deputy, really. But deputies weren't heard of very much in those days. In other words, you have the manager, and then you'd have an under-manager. If you had a big fit, it'd be a manager, an under-manager, and a deputy. But running of the job would be done by the owner of the mine in those days. He'd be the man that would be go around and see that people were looking after their own safety as well as his, no doubt. And that was the way it went. And
so how did you actually become involved in mining? What was your early experience in mining?
Well, my early experience in mining was that my father was a colliery manager here for R.E. Knowles.
In Furnace Vale.
In Furnace Vale, but I better go back from that a bit. His early days were at the Spons mine, and the story around the Spons mine is simply really that when my great-grandfather had it, he made a fair amount of money, and there were seven children. And the only one interested in the mine was my grandfather. And when he died, it was said that he'd amassed about £7,000. And six of the people, of the sons and daughters, as it were, got their £1,000 apiece, and that left me. Grandfather with the £1,000, and it wasn't enough to run the mine really, because all the capital had been taken out of it. So that they'd worked out towards Bowstone Gate, and the distance got too great, and they then started to dig into the dip side. And when they sort of started to dig in the dip side, they, like they do, always got water in the dip side workings, and I think they'd gone down about 50 or 60 yards or so, and they encountered an inrush of water, so to speak. The same water actually feeds Kettlesune village at the present time. And he erected a boiler, and in those days electricity wasn't available. He erected a boiler, and by the time they'd got steam pipes along the tunnel, it was condensed below any sort of working pressure. So in other words, the pumps just jolly well couldn't cope. So what with what he'd had to spend, and what he'd the small amount of capital that he had available, the mine closed just as a result of that. And those were my father's early days. From there he came to manage this pit for Mr. R. E. Knowles of Furness Vale.
What was the name of this pit?
The Furness Clough mine. And he came here to manage this mine for Mr. Knowles. Mr. Knowles was a colliery manager. He'd trained and qualified in this country, and then went to South Africa, managed a mine in South Africa for a number of years, saved a bit of money, bought this place when it was bankrupt. And my father was the first man to start for Mr. Knowles, and he started to get the mine running for him. He bought this place, which was an old mine and brickworks, and things were at about the far end at the Spons pit, and he came here to open, if you like, and manage the pit for Mr. R. E. Knowles at Furness Vale.
When would this be?
Prior to the last war, to the 1914 war. And he would be here for how many years, I don't know, but 5 or 10 years or so, I would say. And then hearing of need, if you like, for somebody to reopen the pit on the Erwood estate, he went, and the Grimshaw family, the owners of the Erwood estate, were more than happy for somebody to go along and reopen their mine, because it had been closed for a number of years. They hadn't been able to get anybody to run it for them, and they were more than happy to get somebody to do just that. So that he and I went along, and it, although I was only a boy and went to the Erwood School, it took about 6 or 8 weeks to clear the roadway, the falls, and actually get up to the coal face. And people up there in the earlier years had always been happy indeed with the fact that they had their own mine on their own estate. And then for a number of years the people that had run it for them gone places, and they didn't like the deep mine coal at all. It used to come a railway wagon, have to be carried at least 5 miles by horse and cart up to Irwood Hall, and they didn't like that sort of coal a bit.
So the consumption was primarily domestic at Irwood Hall?
Yes.
In the early days?
In the early days, yes, although the Castage Mine had a name in...
I'm sorry, you've lost me there. A word I don't understand. Castage.
Castage, that was the name of the pit, if you like. It was known as Castage. Not the seam, but the name of the pit, Castage. It was a very hot coal, even though it was mountain mine and caking. And it used to go to the blacksmiths in the district, and it was highly recommended by these people because it was their only means of welding in those days.
Yeah.
And it used to be said that it was possible to weld a shaft 6 inches in diameter with that particular coal because you could get the necessary welding heat throughout the diameter of the shaft with it. Whereas with other coals, you get it mighty hot on the outside and not hot enough in the middle. So that was a sort of, give you some idea of the heat value of the coal. And in addition to that, there were blacksmiths in Whaley Bridge, Buxton, Macclesfield, and all over the place. And so that the surplus coal used to go to these people for that particular purpose. And then in later years, when gas welding and that sort of thing came in, and breeze was available for the making of shoes for horses, and the fact that it was more easily obtainable than coming all the way to Irwood Pit for it, that was how it went. So it had a dual purpose, house coal and good for that job, very good for that job.
We're talking about which period, before you opened the pit again? Were you under-
oh no, whilst we were there, yeah. Actually, the ICI used to buy it for their forge. In those days, about once a month, they would take 5 tons of what was termed to be smithy coal from Irwood Pit as a regular order that went into their forge someplace.
Now, when you went into the Irwood Pit, the old workings, what were they like?
Well, naturally falls here and there. It took us about 6 or 8 weeks to clear the tunnel.
You really mean what kind of workings were they?
Oh, longwall workings, where total extraction was the method of work, and we carried on in the same old way. We were in about 1800 yards, I would think. Yeah.
And when did you reopen the pit?
Well,
how old would you be?
I would be about 10 years of age. I'm 68 now, so how long ago is that? You'll work that out, won't you? So that would be when we first went to reopen the pit.
I'm curious because I know that you then went to work the sledge system again that your father had worked.
Yeah. Well, it was normal practice in those days. The reason you had a sledge was to, had you sort of wanted to take a pit tub up to the coal face, you would have needed to have made a gateway something like 4 feet high. You would have had to have laid rails sort of up it. You would have had to push the tub. You know, in those days, to push a tub up of 1 in 6, it was on your hands and knees of your head up against it. Whereas with the sledge, you only needed to take about a 2 foot, 2 foot 6 high roadway, and you could pull the sledge up. I know you had to go twice for the amount, but you could pull the sledge up quite easily. Much easier than to push a tub up.
How widespread then was the use of the sledge in this area?
You're asking me really more than I could tell you there. I would say it would be on the Spons Colliery, it would be the sledge. In the Erwood Pit, again, it would be the sledge.
Let me rephrase the question. Do you know of any other collieries that use the sledge?
No, not really, no. I can only speak of that I had experience of, and that had been told about, namely Spons and Castage. The Furnace Vale pit was, of course, in the White Ash seam, where the clay was a necessary part of the raw material needs, in which case you had a roadway something like 6 feet high, and because you were taking the coal and then you were taking the clay beneath on the pillar and stall system of working, so consequently then you were taking the term pay dirt out for the whole size of your roadway. A long wall system on a thin seam, you try to get away with the least amount of of dirt, enough to put your sidewalls in to hold your roadway when the roof settles.
Did you ever find instances where the floor was rising?
Oh yes, I find that at times where the floor was a bit on the soft side, and you had the weights, you'd get a bit of rising on the rails, and you'd cut it out and be away again. It's one of those things that happens more often in deep mining with a soft floor, and it'll very often you go out at night and then next day your rails will be all over the place because it's pushed the weights the floor up. That happens in a soft where the floor's soft. Up there it was relatively hard.
In these small private mines, as they were in those days, what happened when the inspector came around, the mines inspector?
Well, by law, the mines inspector has to visit at least once a year. And no matter where your pit is, it's supposed to be recorded. He's supposed to come once a year. And normally, they're reasonable people. They've, in most cases, been colliery managers themselves. And bear in mind, they'll jump on you if things aren't as they should be, but they're mostly reasonable, and as long as you've done something about it for the next time he comes. So in other words, if it's been 12 months since he came and you've been a good lad, it'll be 12 months when he comes again. If you haven't been so good, he's probably on your back again in a month's time to see if you've done things as they should be. The usual statutory requirements are that your pit's safe and that you're setting your props at the...
Yeah, there's a story about props, isn't there?
Oh, that's up at Durwood.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, well, in those days, we get props out of the wood above. And we'd cut a prop or two and take them in, and then if, for instance, my father wanted another prop or two... he'd tell me what he wanted. When I came out, I'd get a saw, go up into the wood and cut a couple to length and take them back. The story around that is, of course, that there used to be the old inspector that used to come was getting on a bit, and he and his wife, it was a masses of rhododendrons in the Erwood Valley, and it was a really a sight that people from all over the all over the country used to go here from abroad. If they came to Buxton as a visitor, they used to come to Erwood to see the rhododendrons, because for as far as you see on each side of the valley, they were planted with rhododendrons. He used to come along and bring his wife with them at rhododendron time and have some tea at our house and ask how things were, and that was it. Well, when he retired, they sent another, and he was a bit of a hot one, and he was there sitting waiting for me when I came out the pit, and his first remarks were, "I don't see many pit props about. What happens for your pit props?" And I told him, simply as I said before, "Well, and my father wants a couple of props," he tells me, and I come out the pit and I get a saw, go up into the wood and cut a couple to his to length and take them in, and didn't please him very much. He said, what if he wanted the props before I got back again? I said, "Well, I didn't know about that." And anyway, he went into the pit with me and generally found fault with everything, and made us buy a statutory report book. They cost a shilling in those days, but anyway, and we had to make it up each day before we went in. Usually we made it out when we came out, and I had to make sure that I had at least a dozen pit props available for when he came. But we had to pull our socks up when he started. But he left us alone after a bit. A long way to come, you know, from Wigan or someplace.